Good afternoon. This is Richard Pater, the director of BICOM in Israel. It's Wednesday, the 13th of November, and we're at the end of day two of the latest round of fighting between Israel and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip. I'm going to be talking after this with a resident of one of the kibbutzim on the border with Gaza to hear about what life is like. But first of all, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Kobi Michael from the INSS, the Institute of National Security Studies, one of Israel's leading policy think tanks, as well as an impressive academic record. Dr. Kobi Michael has also served as the Deputy Director General and Head of the Palestinian Desk at the Ministry of Strategic Affairs. Kobi, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
My pleasure.
If I could start, and if you can take us back to put a bit of context into this week and talk us a brief history of Palestinian Islamic Jihad and how you trace their growth, both political and militarily, until they have come the enemy that they are today for the State of Israel.
The Palestinian Islamic Jihad is an organization that was established at the beginning, in the beginning of the 80s, as a very marginal but very extreme and violent organization. And it was flourished during the days of the Second Intifada, during the years of 2000-2005, because he actively participated in the suicide bombers attacks that took place during the Second Intifada. And due to the fact that all the Palestinian factions were united, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad became to be more popular among the Palestinian constituency. But after the end of the Second Intifada, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad once again became to be more marginal than it used to be during the Second Intifada. But in the last 2 years or so, it became much stronger and much more influential in the Gaza Strip, which is the core or the central location which it operates from, due to the Iranian support. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad is a pure Iranian proxy. It's fully dependent on the Iranian support in comparison to Hamas, which is also supported by Iran, but it is much more independent. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad is fully independent on the Iranian support, and this is the reason that it is a proxy or an ultimate proxy of the Iranians, much more than Hamas. Now, the problem is that the Palestinian Islamic Jihad became to be stronger from the military point of view due to the Iranian support, the Iranian guidance, and its military capabilities grew in the last 2 years or so, and it is not a marginal organization anymore, and Hamas faces some severe difficulties to restrain the Palestinian Islamic Jihad due to two main reasons. First of all, its military strength. Hamas fears that any trial to restrain the Palestinian Islamic Jihad will lead to internal warfare in the Gaza Strip. And the second reason is that Hamas, without any significant achievement that they can show to their constituency in the Gaza Strip, they have some internal domestic political problem to restrain the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, because the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is fighting or leading the armed resistance against Israel, where Hamas perceives itself as the spearhead of this resistance, and how it comes that they will prevent the Palestinian Islamic Jihad from struggling against Israel or leading the national Palestinian struggle against Israel. So Hamas found itself in a sort of catch-22 in the last year or so, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad became to be the most crucial spoiler with regard to the calm agreement that Israel seeks to reach with Hamas, and vice versa, Hamas seeks to reach with Israel. And talking about the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the gentleman that was killed just 2 days ago, Baha Abu Atta, he was the commander of the northern front of the northern region of the Gaza Strip of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and I would say that he was disobedient with regard to his authorities in the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and of course vis-a-vis Hamas. And I think that the idea that he was killed by Israel is something that Hamas feels very satisfied with. It's a huge relief for Hamas, because he used to be a huge headache for Hamas in the Gaza Strip in the last year or so.
If we can just focus for a moment on the Islamic Jihad's relationship with Iran and the support that they get, could you just outline what does that support look like in terms of how Iran are able to aid them financially or militarily, and what that communication looks like between the two?
First of all, we have to remember that the leadership of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is not located in the Gaza Strip, neither in the West Bank, okay? Their leaders are located in Damascus and in Beirut. The current leadership was elected by the Iranians. When Ramadan Shalah passed away, the natural candidate to replace him was Mohammad al-Hindi. But Mohammad al-Hindi is much more moderate than Ziad al-Nakhale, the leaders that was elected by the Iranians. And he was pro the ideas of getting closer to Hamas and improving the coordination with Hamas, improving the relations with Egypt, and restraining themselves vis-a-vis Israel. The Iranians didn't like the idea, and therefore they forced the Palestinian Islamic Jihad to choose Ziad Nakhale and the other guy that Israel intended to kill 2 days ago in Damascus, Akram El Ajouri. This is an indication to the full influence that the Iranians have on the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Now, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is fully dependent from the financial point of view on the Iranian. Without the Iranian financing, they have no capability to activate or to operate the organization and to pay the salaries to their operatives, to buy or to acquire weapon and so on. And militarily, they are guided by the Iranians outside of the Gaza Strip and inside the Gaza Strip through the web and the internet, but mainly outside the Gaza Strip. Operatives of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad reach to some distant places in Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, Malaysia, Tunisia, and some other places that they feel confident in, they are guided by the Iranians for some weeks or even more than that, and they are coming back to the Gaza Strip, and they guide other guys in the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and they are coming back to the Gaza Strip with technological capacities that enable them to produce independently weapons, mainly rockets, in the Gaza Strip itself, like Hamas. And in addition to that, we have to remember that with all the restrictions and with all the maritime closure and the Egyptian efforts and so on, they are still able to smuggle from time to time weapons from Sinai Peninsula to the Gaza Strip. And in addition to their growing capacities to to produce their weapons in the Gaza Strip, we got the Palestinian Islamic Jihad after 2, 3, 4 years as a much stronger and influential organization in the Gaza Strip.
And how would you compare their power, their strength, especially in rocket production, but in other terms of offensive capability, both qualitative and quantitative, compared to Hamas?
They are very close to Hamas with regard to their capacities. Their rockets, first of all, with regard to the numbers, the estimation is that they have something like 10,000 rockets from different types, including some rockets that are able to reach very far and distant places in Israel. I think that they may be less professional than Hamas, but the gaps are not so big. And we have to remember that the Palestinian Islamic Jihad has an agenda of its own. It is not only an Iranian agenda. In comparison to Hamas, they don't have any interest with regard to the local population, to the Gazans themselves, because they don't perceive themselves as a potential replacement of Hamas with regard to the ruling of the Gaza Strip. Okay, they perceive themselves as a resistance organization, a Salafi jihadi resistance organization. Their vision, their grand vision, is the establishment of the Islamic Caliphate, where Palestine will be part of it. And therefore, they have no accountability or responsibility towards the population of Gaza. With regard to Hamas, the situation is totally different, because Hamas is not only a terror organization. Hamas is also a political player that perceives itself as an alternative, even the ultimate alternative, to Fatah. And the end game of Hamas is to gain full control over the entire Palestinian system, which includes the Palestinian Authority and the PLO. This is not the aim of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and therefore Hamas must be much more responsible and accountable towards the population of Gaza, and it has some other calculations which are political in their essence.
You mentioned before kind of the catch-22 that Hamas finds itself. We heard from early this year that both the Islamic Jihad and Hamas were sharing joint command and control centers. But as you say, that Hamas now appear to be more interested in reaching some understandings with Israel. I mean, how do you explain this this kind of contradiction and with Hamas and that the game they're playing?
First of all, you are right. And what is happening now, it is a very, very important precedent that we see in the Gaza Strip. It is the first time since ever that Hamas sits on the fence. Hamas is not intervening in this campaign, at least till now. And the idea that they used to operate the joint operations room, it is something that that really was before, and it still exists today. And even now, when we are talking, this room is operated. But this is the first time that Hamas does not participate in launching rockets towards Israel, because Israel is focusing all the campaign only against the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And Hamas understands pretty well, mainly after the lessons of protective edge operations from July, August 2014, that if they will intervene now, Israel will be forced to retaliate much more aggressively, and this is not their interest. Their interest is to weaken the Palestinian Islamic Jihad to the level that they will be able to restrain the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and to promote or to advance the understandings with Israel in order to improve dramatically the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, because this is the most crucial and the most important objective that they see in front of them right now. And the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is a spoiler in front of them, and a spoiler in front of achieving this aim. And therefore, I think that Hamas feels a huge relief from this this campaign, because eventually they don't like the idea that the Palestinian Islamic Jihad became to be such a strong and influential organization in the Gaza Strip. And this is a real precedent. It is the first time that it has happened.
If I can ask you internally about Islamic Jihad, with the demise of Abu al-Atta now, I mean, do you think it's the case that that you cut the head off a snake and another one regrows in its place that could potentially be more formidable? How do you assess their long-term future? But also in the short term, how do you see them operating at the moment, kind of once they're in this this status of being under attack and wanting to respond in a coordinated fashion?
First of all, with all the importance of Baha Abul-Atta, I'm not sure that he was the head of the snake, or I would say that this is a very, very weird snake that has many heads, okay? So he is one of the heads of the snake. But there is no doubt that the idea that he is not there anymore is something that will undermine and will disrupt the capacities of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad till the moment that they will be able to replace Abul-Atta with somebody else that will need some time and efforts in order to reach to the level of experience that Baha Abul-Atta had. And this is something that undermines the stability of the organization and its capacities to act and to operate. But it doesn't mean that this is the end of the organization, not at all. I mean, we are pretty experienced in this regard, and we know that all of these organizations, not only the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, it is true for Al-Qaeda and for ISIS and for other organizations as well, they replace the people that were killed by some other people. And sometimes those who are replacing the leaders that were killed are much more talented and much more skillful than those that are not with us anymore. But the immediate benefit or the immediate advantage is that Israel and Hamas, and in this regard, Israel and Hamas are sharing the same interest, I think. I think that Israel and Hamas have some more time in order, first of all, to try to advance, to promote the understandings between of them without the Palestinian Islamic Jihad as a significant or essential spoiler. And secondly, it is a good opportunity for Israel to use the temporary weakness of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad in order to collect more intelligence and to build more operational capacities in order to hit the Palestinian Islamic Jihad furthermore and to weaken it furthermore. But eventually, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad will be able to recover itself. If not fully recovering, at least partially.
You mentioned the understandings kind of that are ongoing by proximity talks, I imagine, between Israel and Hamas. But aside from this latest round of violence, where do you see those talks up to? I mean, there was suggestions in the Israeli media earlier this week of talks going ahead about the return of the bodies of the soldiers and the captured Israeli civilians in Gaza. Is that part of the deal? Is this a realistic chance that will reach a conclusion?
In a sense, it is realistic, but unfortunately, it depends on the consequences of one event. You know, it will be enough that one rocket that will be launched by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad will be exploded on the roof of the hospital in Ashkelon or in Ashdod in order to bring Israel to retaliate very aggressively and then to escalate the situation to the degree that all the understandings will be far away from us. And on the other hand, if any sort of Israeli bombing in the Gaza Strip will cause many casualties among the Palestinians, Hamas will not be able to remain sitting on the fence and will join the campaign, and then we will find ourselves in front of another escalation that might last some time. And once again, the understandings or the potential understandings between Israel and Hamas will be far away once again. So I hope that both sides, I mean the Israel and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, will be able to end this cycle. And if it will be ended with the current level of casualties, I believe that with the political will in Israel, now we are in a very sensitive situation where we don't have a government, okay, or at least we have a transitional government. And the political situation is a bit complex, but once there will be a government will be established and there will be a political will and understanding to reach or to realize the understandings with Hamas, I think that it will be realistic. But we have to remain realistic in the very same time and to understand that eventually Hamas is at the end of the day a terror organization that doesn't recognize in the right of Israel to exist, and we will not be able to reach to a very stable a peace agreement with Hamas. It will be understandings. It will be a sort of a calm agreement that will last, I hope, several years, but with the potential of the terroration and with the potential that we will find ourselves once again in a military campaign against Hamas. Because as long as Hamas is ruling the Gaza Strip and as long as Hamas remains stick to its basic ideology, which is religious and national ideology, we have to remain realistic and to remember that it is not an option to reach to a very stable and peaceful agreement with Hamas. But on the other hand, I must say that if we will reach to a sort of a meaningful, significant understanding with Hamas, a meaningful calm agreement with Hamas that will last several years, things might be changed in the Gaza Strip, mainly if the humanitarian situation will be improved dramatically from the economic point of view, from the infrastructure point of view, if people will be able to leave the Gaza Strip and to come to the Gaza Strip with the assistance of the Egyptians, for example, and so on, things might be changed. And who knows, maybe one day we will be able to stabilize the situation here in the region.
On that positive note, we'll leave it there. But thank you very much indeed, Greg. That was really very valuable.
My pleasure.
So I'm delighted to be joined now with Lilach Evensur, who is a kibbutz member on Kibbutz Nirim that sits right on the Gaza border in the Eshkol Regional Council. As I mentioned, she's a member of the kibbutz. She's also a member of the emergency response team on the kibbutz. Lilach, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you.
So if I could start by asking you, I've had the pleasure of visiting your beautiful kibbutz when it's been beautiful and tranquil. Can you describe the atmosphere on the kibbutz over the last day or so?
It's tough. Lots of members, especially families with little children, went away to the families, their families in Israel, so that they can relax the children and not being stuck on home all day. The families with the older children and the one that the children are not home stayed in the kibbutz. And it's very quiet. Sometimes we hear the bombing of IDF and the bombing from Gap. We have red alert from time to time.
Yeah,
we learn to... by hearing, to know who is shooting what and when.
And how many red alerts have you had over the last day or two?
Today, I think three times, but it's not just one. If they do it for like three times in a row or even four times. And we hear the firing also from that is launches for two Eina Shlosha and Kisufim.
Right, these are the kibbutzim nearby.
Yes, yes.
And how is it for your children coping with this reality and of the alerts?
Because they grow to it from the first Qassam rocket that launched when my oldest were about 1 year old till today, they know they're familiar with the situations. When they were younger, we went away, but now they want just to stay at home in the rooms, and they feel safe here. But a lot of children are frightened, and parents take them to the families in Netanya, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem.
I understand. Could you tell us a little bit about your role as the part of the emergency response team on the kibbutz?
I'm in charge of counting the populations to know which people went away and where and which stayed. We are doing counts. They count every day and all day. So we know when, if an emergency will come, if it just be one of the houses will damage, we'll know who's in there and how many people in the house. So we are very strict on it and checking all the time.
And have you had any more, like any IDF forces that have come to reinforce? Are you concerned about possible infiltrations?
We have some soldiers in the kibbutz that were stranded yesterday and still are in the kibbutz. Like in every escalation, we see some troops of soldiers, and after it's getting quiet.
And you've had experience in the past of potential infiltrations quite close to your kibbutz, is that right?
Yes, but not now. In this area, there is all time something happens. Every day we hear the helicopters and the planes. It's always in some. It's not quiet.
Sure. I mean, does this round that's only started yesterday, obviously, does it feel different from the previous rounds of escalation?
No, we have escalations at least six in the past year. So it's the same. Now we don't know. I'm waiting for the reports in Al Jazeera to know if it ends or not, because they're the only one that reports on that in real time. now, the last escalations ended after 24 hours. And now it's going, it's more. And we don't know what to do if it's going to be ended, going to end tonight or next week, and we don't know how to plan our moves. Do we have to evacuate the kibbutz to another kibbutz, or can we stay? There's a lot of things that we don't know, and we don't know how to get ready for that. So we're acting day by day.
I understand. And what do you feel about, if I can ask you a political question, what do you think of the government's approach to the situation and this latest offensive?
Well, my icon in WhatsApp and Facebook is a sitting duck. And that's how I feel. I feel like a sitting duck. My government doesn't really count me or the other people in this region. If it's not falling in hurting people in the Tel Aviv or Rishon, then it doesn't count. So all the members of Eshkol and Sdot Negev and Sderot and Chof Ashkelon and Ashkelon can stay at home. It's okay. So 24 hours of bombing, and let's go on. They don't do something real. They don't do something that will put an end for this situation. They always they say that it's Iran, Iran, Iran by Gap or Hamas. But okay, so we know to do something else. We've been in the situation too many times. We even been 2 months away from our home in Tzuk Eitan, and we are willing to give our government the biggest credit that we can, and we cannot to give a lot, but they must put an end to this.
So if I can ask you, what would you like the government to do?
To talk with Hamas, with the jihad, with the Egyptians, with I don't know who, just to talk and set an agreement. There was an agreement before. In 2000, I went to the Gaza Strip and been in Jabalia and ate in a restaurant by the shore.
Must be a distant memory now.
Yes, after 20 years. Instead of drink by the shore of Gaza, I'm getting bombs from Gaza.
Wow. Lila, thank you so much for your time today. I hope you and your family can stay safe and enjoy the beauty and the quietness of the kibbutz without the threat of rockets.
Thank you.